Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hot and sweaty. Starting to look a lot like Christmas, isn't it? It is, because we get the gift of Michael Harrison being Friday after all. Oh. Talkers Magazine. Hello there, Michael.
Hello, Todd. It doesn't seem like it's Friday. It seems like it's Thursday. And yet, Memorial Day seems like it was a month ago. I just can't deal with time anymore.
Yeah. 4 day weeks work out nicely, though. They zip by the way you want a week, too.
I think some country, I don't remember which one it was, the prime minister suggested. Maybe New Zealand. She's a pretty out there thinker, the woman that runs New Zealand. But I'm not sure if it's New Zealand, but there was the suggestion that they actually go to a 4 day work week. That might actually be very productive.
I wouldn't mind it because I work 12 hours a day anyway. Yeah, so what the heck?
I mean,
I think most people do now.
I think people work all the time. So the whole idea of a work week. Yeah, and that's one of the things we've discovered with this whole lockdown for many people that are white-collar workers or office workers able not to have to go to a place, is that we're finding that productivity, as opposed to, you know, punching a time clock and, you know, having a ball and chain of a desk that you have to sit at to prove you're working, productivity is really the goal. And in most cases, if you give a damn about your career, you're working day and night. And that's because of the technology. The very technology that's freeing us from the office is making us work all the time. But if you're productive, you can get away with it.
There are no barriers between home life. So if you can't sleep at 3 in the morning, well, you might as well go to your desk and get some work done. And then you can manage your day more the way you like, but you end up working a lot more.
Well, it's amazing to me. I run a business. We publish a magazine and a website and some radio shows and all of that. And I find myself sometimes making deals or having communications with CEOs and presidents and very significant people in our business. And I realize, wait a second, we're having this conversation at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Monday, and they're working. So it's not just the rank and file workers, but the people at the top work day and night. I think Trump works day and night. As a matter of fact, I don't think Trump ever sleeps.
Or stops thinking about his pursuit of whatever he wants to be pursuing, whatever's digging a hole in his brain.
Right, right. But when you get up in the middle of the night, as you probably do, as most people do, do you check your phone? Honest,
that's the first thing I do.
Okay.
I think that's why I wake up. As a matter of fact, I'm sleeping longer and later during this shutdown because the day is less structured and there's less of my brain energy that's fired up in the morning. So I'll sleep. I'll be up from, say, 2:30 to 4:30, and I'll read and I'll get some work done, and then I'll doze back for a while, and then I'll wake up and I'll listen to a podcast for a while. It's back and forth like that, but I'll sleep later. And I feel more rested during this period because there's not that schedule in the morning. Okay, I have to, you know, run a grandson to school. I have to go to the gym. Like, all those routines have been disrupted. So the brain isn't thinking about the day while you're sleeping.
And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are saying they don't know what day it is. People are missing appointments.
Yeah.
They don't know what day. How about your hygiene and grooming? Are you dealing with your things like haircuts, brushing your teeth, flossing, wearing fresh underwear?
Well, I mean,
things of that nature.
Fortunately, I'm capable of brushing my own teeth. But the haircut, I do a little snipping here and there because I haven't been able to get a haircut. Yeah.
It's dangerous to do that. I was just talking to Bernadette about that. She said, well, do you want me to try? Because I really look awful. I look like a crazy, man. And I'm just afraid to, well, first of all, I'm afraid to go to a haircut or a barber or a beauty shop. I actually go to a beauty salon, which is kind of a funny thing in terms of if you live long enough, you see everything, you know, so we're at that era. But I don't want to go anywhere where there's hair flying around and that type of proximity to other people. I mean, things are changing now as we're venturing out. We're starting to realize how filthy everything is. My hair is, you know, way over my ears and down my neck. I look like something out of, you know, my life in 1970. And, you know, I just, I said
to
my wife.
Yeah, it just doesn't look as good, I assume. I assume you look better in 1970.
I looked significantly better, yes. But it's just, I don't know when I'm ever going to get a haircut again because I do not want to do it myself. And, you know, some people are having.
But you said no to Bernadette?
Yeah, I did. I didn't say no. I said I don't want to take advantage of her. You know, she's not a skilled hair cutter.
It doesn't require a lot of skill.
Oh, come on. Haven't you ever heard of beauty school? Did you ever hear the song Beauty School Dropout from Greece? Come on. Now I'm going to get a bunch of emails from people saying I'm making fun of beauty school people. Haircutting is a science.
I think it's not that complicated. You know what? I got this idea once. Years ago, I went to my regular guy and I said, you know, it seems to me you could cut my hair in 10 minutes instead of a half hour. And I won't feel gypped if you do. And now he does it in 10 minutes.
Maybe he stopped
talking.
They
drag it out.
That's true. It is
they
true.
Do.
But I have curly hair and it's starting to thin in places. So it's hard to cut. When you have straight hair, it's easier. When you have curly hair, it's not that easy. I don't want to make a whole big deal about my hair, but the point that we're driving at is we're dressing differently, we're shaving differently, we're cutting our hair differently. We're going through the normal processes of how we take care of ourselves personally in a very different way. I haven't worn a suit or a tie in months. I don't know if I ever wanted to go back to doing that.
Well, there's, you know, you have to, I guess, because you have meetings. You're a fancy businessman. I don't wear suits and ties, but for once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. But the important thing for me is taking the shower every day. And I wouldn't feel good just staying unbathed all day.
Uh-huh.
So in terms of, so I keep that habit going. Is that what you're saying that you do?
Oh, I
you're still clean every day.
I'm still
right?
One of the cleanest people you'll ever run into. I mean, I'm a germaphobe.
Oh, good. Yeah. But I'm not. Are you really a germaphobe?
To a certain level, I am.
We need germs.
On a certain level,
I think they're
am.
Important to us.
Well, I mean, some of them are friends of humanity and others are not.
That's true. But you can't sort them that effectively.
Well, first I ask you where they came from, you know, what are their values? Are they liberals? You know, there's all kinds of things I expect to know about my germs before I ingest them.
Uh-huh.
But things are dirty.
Well,
I was listening to the news that preceded us and they were talking about Governor Ned having some type of a dialogue with the casinos about them opening or closing or what they're doing. And it occurred to me, one of the filthiest things that we deal with is money. Money is filthy, but we love it so much that we put it in our mouths, we hold it, we don't wash our hands after we use it. The symbolism of money supersedes the reality that it's a coin or a piece of paper handed from person to person to person all over the place. You don't know who, they don't wash their hands, we don't wash our money. Money is filthy.
Well, yes, but we are filthy. So there was this story last week, I think it was, that said that there are, even when you're just speaking in a natural voice, one person to another, that all kinds of little globules of saliva tiny droplets are airborne and sitting there for 8 to 14 seconds, I think they said. Yeah. And what that says to me is that we are meant to be sharing our germs, that that's how we exercise and make sure we exercise our immune systems and make sure that we're protected from the new diseases. They get passed around and we build up the immunities. And if we don't have that, I think that's a graver danger to us than being exposed.
You make a very good point, and I won't make jokes about that because what you're saying is true. But do you remember the old saying kids would say to each other, say it, don't spray it.
I do remember that. Yeah.
There's always kids out there. They spit. Well, there are people I know. They spit all over you. I want to say, say it, don't spray it. You know, like Daffy Duck.
I do recall that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. You know, but
that's funny that you remember that. You're really close to your 6-year-old years, apparently.
I have my inner child that never really left. I just have layers.
That's
and
good.
Layers
it's important to do because
on it. Yeah.
Because this is a creativity business. So and youthfulness is creative and aging is less creative. I think there are walls that go up between the parts of our mind.
Well, what happens is, there's no doubt you lose your enthusiasm, you lose your wonder, you lose your patience. Not everybody. If you can maintain your enthusiasm and your wonder about the mysteries of life and your zest for learning new things, your willingness to give up old things, you remain younger than otherwise. I'm always amazed that I run into people who are 10, 15 years younger than me, and I talk to them like they're older than me, and I think they're older than me simply by the way they look and act. And much of how they look is how they act. How you act becomes how you look. So it is an attitude, and one should cling to those things that are part of youth, but not at the expense of wisdom. Wisdom is gold.
Yes. Well, that's the reward that you get. You know, that's right. The money you're putting in the bank for all the years of living. We can agree on that. Hold on, Michael Harrison, Talkers Magazine. Michael joins us every Friday. We'll talk more coming up on WTIC. It's WTIC. Todd here with Michael Harrison, our Friday first hour regular. Michael, an amazing week, a volcanic reaction to the Minneapolis events.
I'll tell you, I'm so upset about that. It's so frustrating to see this this racial issue just go on and on and on, and I'm just not sure whether or not it's reflective of the true relationship in this country between the races. I don't know whether or not it's cherry-picking terrible incidents. I mean, what happened in Minneapolis is an awful thing. What happened in Brunswick, Georgia, an awful thing. I'm just not sure whether there's a lot more to these kinds of incidents and events than, and if you look at the statistics in terms of crime and white-on-black crime, black-on-black crime, black-on-white crime, the number of crimes, the nature of crimes, I don't know whether white and black people hate each other and don't get along. I don't see it necessarily.
I don't feel
that way. Exactly. And it bothers me that this scenario keeps playing out every other week, 2 weeks, every month. And it's very unhealthy for the nation. And I'm just not sure of what's driving it.
Well, it's there. And I think there's something about the fact that we're talking about cities. And we're talking about poverty, and we're talking about police, and those are all unique situations and groups of people. So you throw all those together, and it's unique. I don't think we can extrapolate it out to the rest of the country. First of all, the country is largely self-segregated or been motivated to segregate because of certain policies like busing through the years that drove people into polarized living situations. So that's unfortunate. And then I think if you're working in an urban area as a police officer, there's certainly a lot more intensity in terms of the work you're doing and maybe the danger that you're in. So there's a lot of different factors, don't you think?
There's no question. There's a lot of factors, but the statistics indicate otherwise. And I don't want to run the risk here of coming across that I'm insensitive to these terrible incidents. I mean, that police officer with his head on George Floyd's, with his knee on his head, I mean, he has been arrested and he is being charged with, I think, third degree murder. So at least justice, the wheels of justice are operating properly. I mean, what was he thinking? Did he want to just throw his life away? I mean, was he consumed with hatred? Is he a loose cannon, this cop? You know, what's the story there? But
there was such a feeling of indifference that he gave off, as if he was, as if he could have been working on his shopping list or something while he was doing that. It was disconnected from humanity. And that's what's so scary about it, I think. The way he did it would suggest that this is the way he does policing routinely.
Probably, unless, you know, he was on drugs or something. He had a bad day at the, you know, at home. But the fact of the matter is I do not believe most people are like that. There are black and white people working in police forces together. I just think that we've come a long way, and I hate to see it set back because of this narrative that the media and, I guess to a certain degree, race baiters. There's an industry, you know, there's an industry that, you know, people like Al Sharpton, they love stuff like this. It keeps them going. And I just don't think most people are racists on either side.
I agree with you. I don't think we even have a lot of evidence of people being racist. Certainly there are people who have attitudes towards other groups because on a primal level, we are tribal. And that means that we tend to separate into our own little groups. And whatever division there can be, we will exercise. And it could all be white people and white, you know, who are sectioning off their neighborhoods and having hostilities towards each other. But it's different when it's racial differences because you can see it. And you can see the hostilities between whites and blacks. And it causes a different societal dynamic, I think.
But there are tremendous hostilities between whites and whites, and there are tremendous hostilities between blacks and blacks.
True.
There's more black on black crime than there is white on black crime in terms of murders.
Yes, a lot of this is politicized for
that's the point
because
that's,
it's yeah.
And any kind of politics that tears people together and focuses on the cracks and the divisions between people, I think here at this point in late May 2020, we've got to stop this. We have to stop it because we're heading in a really bad direction. It could go to the point where it's past the point of no return, and that troubles me deeply.
Well, I don't
know what
could be happening right now.
Yeah, I think you and I are like-minded about this, and it's just very hard to talk about because it's easy to be misunderstood, and it's easy to seem like you believe that the ills of society don't exist. You know, it's like a Pollyanna type of a thing. And believe me, there are racists among us. There are people who are haters among us. And there are incidents where being black in America is very difficult, just like it's very difficult right now to be Chinese in America. It's very difficult always to be of any kind of what we call a minority. And the irony is we're a nation of minorities now. Almost everybody is a member of some kind of a minority. Even majorities are minorities. We talk about women as a minority and women are the majority.
Yes.
So we're really screwed up. We're screwed up. That's what I'm trying to say. We're really screwed up. We're becoming neurotic.
Well, we are that too. And that's being pushed. That neurosis is being pumped up because the more divided we are, somehow that works politically too. All right, we're talking to Michael Harrison, our regular Friday guest. He's here every week, first hour, and we just bounce around the big stories of the week, and this week it's not too hard, as it hasn't been the last couple of months. This is actually a big story that isn't a COVID story, and that's the first time in a while. So we'll break for news, and then we'll talk more. Stay with us on WTIC.
All my wolves begin to howl, wake me up, the time is now.
Yeah, there's a lot of revolt in the air. Michael Harrison is here. Michael, there's something I want to say attached to what we were just talking about with regard to Minneapolis, and that is, I think, when the political machinery is not responsive to the will of the people, when democratic mechanisms aren't functioning, which is how I think we are right now. You've got a police force that's union represented, so changing changing policies is really hard. You've got a kind of dug-in dynamic going on in terms of urban politics and a single-party leadership. There just isn't democracy going on. Therefore, there's no mechanism through which the will of the people can affect change in the power structure. And that leads to frustration building up and a sense of despair. And I think that gets expressed when there's an explosion like this.
I think you're absolutely right. And that despair is expressed in irrational behavior, like blowing up, you know, liquor stores and burning down buildings and all of that, which is, you know, the medicine is worse than the disease. And then you wind up being angry at the people who are on your own side. That's when you have a problem. When you're angry at the people on your side because of the way they behave. And the way they respond and the way they present the position that you believe in, they make a bad image for it. So what we have to have is a more honest media. But more importantly, this is going to be a long time to fix. We have to educate people how to be citizens, good old civics and citizenship. We have to also turn out the vote. Yeah, so many people complain and then they don't vote. And I don't know why. It's just
they feel like it doesn't function, and it's the opposite response. You should go out and organize other people to come vote with you and take control of the process. And instead, people just throw up their hands and walk away from it, which gives more power to the people you disagree with.
But I even have mixed feelings about what I just said, because if uneducated people who buy into BS vote, that's worse than them not voting. You cannot have a functioning, vibrant, healthy democracy if you don't have an educated public. And what we need right now is we need the public to be educated in civics, what we used to call social studies. And we have to educate our children if we learn how to use the media. The media today is so powerful. It's so pervasive. It is so insidiously influential. And it is so full of it in so many ways that people have to learn how to use it. And we can teach children from grade school on how to use media. The problem is schools teach people what to think, not how to think. So we have to teach the teachers. We have to teach the educators. We have a lot of work to do. I don't know.
Well, let's dive into that a little bit, though. Mm-hmm. What is the lesson in the media? Because I think what a lot of adults are doing now, and the media seems to be responding by becoming more siloed, you know, just being stuck in their vertical in terms of what group of people they represent, so that people are watching a reflection of their own beliefs or reading or listening to rather than a spectrum.
Yeah, they are targeting audiences that they feel will buy what they're saying. It's pandering. It's just like the race baiting. There's pandering for personal gain, for corporate gain, for company gain, for political gain. Tell them what they want to hear. Get them riled up. Press their buttons. Handle them. As opposed to earnestly saying, here is the information. Make up your own mind. Here's what you need to know. Cover elections by talking about policies as opposed to appearance, whether a guy wore a mask or didn't wear a mask. All of this stuff is one giant distraction aimed to entertain. We're a fat, lazy bunch of people, and we've got to get back on the stick and realize the universe doesn't owe us a living.
But you understand the dynamics because you're in the media business. You know how much harder the internet has made it for print publications to survive, all media to survive, and the news industry is responding to a new priority that says you want stories that generate clicks because clicks generate revenues.
Right, right. Do you realize what a destructive process that is? Put out stories that generate clicks, whether they're fake, whether they're incendiary, whether they cause anger, whether they cause titillation. Get those clicks because clicks equal money. We measure our success by clicks as opposed to positive reviews.
Well, survival's become tough. But right. but you ever watch on a, you go to a, even a credible newspaper, a news source that you think is credible, and after you've gotten down their first half dozen stories down the page, then there are suddenly all this contracted stuff that's designed, that's just the cheapest, cheesiest sort of clickbait. And then you get to the first page and you have to click for each subsequent thing.
Right, each subsequent thing. Right. So that more clicks are gotten, because clicks mean money, and you're being dragged along this boring story that sucks you in and then doesn't deliver until the very end, and usually the punchline stinks. So you were taken, and while you're doing it, it's designed for you to make a couple of mistakes, because they don't care whether you read the story.
Yes.
Mistakes. and you click into something you don't want, and then on top of it, to add insult to injury, you get a virus. You get a virus going on a legitimate website. Talk about responsibility.
Yeah, then they lock you down and want $10,000 if you want your computer back. All right, hold on. We've got a call from Patty who wants to talk about teaching social studies. Patty, you're on WTIC. Michael Harrison is here as well. Go ahead, Patty.
Yes, I wanted to make a comment to Michael that he is so correct about teaching the children social studies. And so that they can learn how to live life in 100% humane. And
you mean to be civically responsible, to be good citizens?
To be a good citizen, because here in Connecticut, in a lot of other schools, they're not teaching the children geography, they're not teaching them history, and they're not teaching them social studies. In that, I'm a substitute teacher, and I'm to the point that it really gets me uptight, because I see these children that are losing out. They're losing out because we are so irresponsible. Not us, but the system is being irresponsible. And
Michael, go ahead and respond to Patty.
I'm taking it in. Before I respond, I'm listening to what she says, because she's got real emotion. She's a caring person. I wish she were my substitute teacher when I was a kid. I mean, let me pull you from the brink of losing it, Patty, because I don't want your frustration to turn into our entertainment. But I really respect you and am very touched by the passion that you bring to this conversation. Yes, the kids are losing out, but they're gonna grow up to be schlubs. You know, today's cute kid that isn't getting an education is tomorrow's big dork that's gonna cause you problems in your life.
And so
we're ultimately all losing out. We have an investment in our children. It's called our future, and the future that our children will grow into. We're all responsible for each other, and if you think that sounds kumbaya-ish, you're wrong. We are a social creature. Haven't we learned that during this coronavirus crisis? But, Patty, you have made my day. Not because you agreed with me, but because you are such an agreeable human being, and I appreciate that you're out there.
I was listening to the conversation, and then that you started speaking about social studies, and I said, oh, my goodness, I need to speak to you, because you're the only person that will be able to understand where I'm coming from.
But Patty, what is it that is being taught in the schools instead of those things, those concrete social study type topics that you were referring to?
Nothing. Nothing.
That's true, Todd. Nothing.
The big thing is gym. Mm.
The big thing is
in the school system.
Right. No, what she's saying is that in many cases, the schools are really babysitters. Many teachers are frustrated and have given up. They're afraid the parents are going to take the side of the kid. Everybody's afraid of getting sued. The kids think they're entitled. They have no clue about how dangerous the world is and how lucky they are to have the blessings that this country has provided for them and that their families provide for them. They're a bunch of schnooks. Not all of them. But
I'm confused by this, because the teachers I talk with talk about being stressed for time, that with all the testing, there isn't enough time for the subjects they want to teach, and they want to be able to do more projects, and they just can't squeeze enough time out of the days.
Patty is saying that.
No, but I'm just saying their time. But how does that reconcile with they're not being taught anything? The teachers say there's not a minute left in the day.
What's your answer to that, Patty?
I do agree with the teachers. Yes, I do. And that's where that... And this is the problem, and I don't understand how you can fix that. I mean, when I was a child, there was enough time to teach all the subjects. But now,
but if they're not teaching geography and they're not teaching history and the other things under the social studies umbrella, something else must be taking that time. So you're saying there's more gym, although
science.
I thought that gym is the first thing that gets cut in order to make more time because of the testing.
No, the gym here I think is great. They're doing a lot of activities. But what it really emphasizes is math and science. That's what the time is going to, math and science.
Okay. And those are the big things now, I guess.
Well, at least
okay.
they're teaching.
Well,
thank
I mean,
you
so much for the
thank
call.
Thank you, Patty. At least they're teaching math and science. But I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, they would have a class that would say how a bill becomes a law, and I actually believed. Gosh, I was so naive as a kid. Even though part of me had a lot of street smarts, but about things like this, I actually believed going to school that if you wrote a letter to your congressman and you suggested to the congressman that a certain law should be changed or passed or brought up to the Congress or to the Senate or to the state legislature, mm-hmm. that the congressperson, the legislator, would read it, consider it, and if he or she liked it, would bring it up, and maybe you'd be responsible for having a law passed. That's the way it worked. I believed that.
Well, that's what being young is for, believing things like that.
Well, not that I think that could ever happen, but at least maybe it's a compass direction. It's an ideal that we should still hold dear and not laugh at it. When you laugh at idealism and consider any kind of idealism naive, well, then you may as well kiss whatever you have goodbye because you're heading down the path to corruption and degradation.
Yeah, well, I think that's an oversimplification that is representative of how the process works. So where there is an energy that's trying to express itself, there is often a legislator willing to take that energy and try to convert it into a law, but it is a lot more rigged than that, no question. Michael Harrison is here. It is Friday. Stay with us. More coming your way on WTIC. Well, yes, Friday afternoon. We've been having intense conversation. It's usually time to stretch out and relax a little bit, get ready for the weekend. And we've got summer weather, all the more reason to be relaxing, and yet the world is not so relaxed.
These are very, very stressful times. As a matter of fact, psychology and personal relationships is one of the major topics of conversation in the media because people are depressed. There's an increase in suicides, frustration, confusion. I mean, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news here, but people could use kindness. People can use a little bit of love. And these are difficult times. People are suffering. They're frightened.
You know what bothers me?
What?
That thing about where you divide when you're walking towards each other to get far away from each other because you're so mm-hmm. dangerous. People are so dangerous. But while people are pinning themselves against the wall to get as far away from you as possible because you're passing down the same corridor as they are, they also don't look at you and say hi a lot of the time. And that bothers me. I was out walking today through the woods, and I pass other walkers on the trail, and there's no acknowledgement that you exist. Somehow the mask and the virus have become this barrier to being human.
You make a good point. I've noticed that myself. And people should be aware that the wall is dangerous too. So if you're leaning up against the wall, somebody may have spittled on it. You know, okay, that's what I was saying earlier when we started out. Everything is dirty. I mean, you know, what are you going to touch? I had a guy yell at me at a public bathroom. I actually went out 1 week ago to look at the beach because it was the most crowded it's ever been. So I positioned myself in a place where I could take photos and get a handle on it without going into the stuff. I had to go to the bathroom. And this is kind of a personal discussion. We're running out of time, so maybe I won't. I'll tell it. So I went to the public bathroom by a beach, which are not the most pleasant places. And I very carefully did my little thing, and then there's two sinks where you have to press it down and all that.
Oh,
and I'm looking at
those.
The door. And there's a guy standing there, like, washing his hands. And I said to myself, self, I ain't touching anything. I'm not touching rails. I'm not touching a thing. I'm going to walk out of this bathroom without washing my hands because I think it's safer.
This guy who was washing his hands
yelled
gave you a hard time?
He yelled at me. He said, hey, you know, you're supposed to wash your hands. And I...
Yeah, and you're supposed to mind your business, wise guy.
This is the thing. Are we supposed to police each other, or are we supposed to mind our business? This is one of the reasons people are afraid of each other right now. This is the story of what happened in New York with the white woman called the police on the black bird watcher. The guy is in the park watching birds. She's walking her dog, but she took it off the leash in a place in Central Park where you're supposed to have the dog on a leash. This guy says
to
her...
Wasn't she so crazy, though?
Stupid.
I could not believe... I'm calling police and telling them that an African-American
man
is threatening me. She was out of her mind.
Yes,
but you know what? The response was out of its mind, too. Why did she lose her job?
Well... That's interesting. That's a great question. We could
Why
do a whole
does
show
what
on
she
that.
Said to a guy in Central Park have to do with her job? It's none of
because
their
we don't have privacy anymore because everything is public and everything is politicized and everything is a big cause and a big issue. You know, there's an old expression. It's a tzimis. It's a big, big bunch of stuff, you know, that really shouldn't be. Yeah. Well, people lose their jobs for what they post on their Facebook page. I mean, so this is just an extension of that. Somebody didn't think it was politically correct, which it wasn't. It was. If she worked for me,
I'd
fire her. I'd fire her.
You would?
Yeah.
On seeing a video, would you call her in an interview? Because it seems to me videos lie to us all the time.
I would take the proper steps to be sure of what I was doing. When I said I'd fire her, what I'm saying is the process
You'd
would
start
begin.
A process.
I'd start a process where I'd think about it. Yeah. Yeah. I think she was outrageous. I think she was outrageous.
She was outrageous. But people have a right to be to have a bad day and to be a dope. And if somebody's there every day working for me and I feel like I'm satisfied with it, who knows? Maybe they were.
Right.
Maybe they loved having the excuse.
But it goes back to the point that we were driving at, and that is, do you open your mouth and say, hey, you're supposed to wash your hands? Or do you turn it around and say, mind your own business? I specifically didn't wash my hands because I thought it was the safer thing to do. I wasn't touching anything. You know, I had a plan. It was part of my process. And this guy made an assumption. Now, what if I turned around and punched him in the mouth? I wouldn't do that.
That would have been great. And then we could have had a good conversation, Mike.
But I would have got my hand dirty on his chin. And his spittily drooling dumb chin.
How does he know you don't have a gallon of sanitizer in the car that you just can't wait to pour on your hands?
Right,
what is he doing bothering you about whether you use the sink or not?
None of us know.
It's virtue signaling.
When you're out there in the public, you don't know who you're dealing with. That's an old expression. You don't know. That's why road rage is crazy. Oh, yep. My goodness. I am.
All right, Michael Harrison.
This has been
this
so
was a great
intense.
Hour, as usual.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now you need the weekend.
I really enjoy talking to you, Todd. Thank you for having me on. And
all right, Michael.
Patty and
we'll
everybody
see you next
else
week.
Out there. Have a good weekend.
Yeah. Have a great weekend.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.